Well, I was caught a little off guard there. I was caught a little off guard with the song, too. I didn't realize the basses would not know that part of that song. So by verse 2, I was trying to get my part figured out with the rest of you guys. But that was an excellent selection to sing in relation to this meeting. And again, Sherry and I are glad to be with you, and I'm glad that Sherry is able to accompany me this time for this meeting, get to meet all of you, and I get to renew acquaintances with those of you who were here the last time I was here. For those of you who are new, I've met a lot of folks. I wasn't here last time, but some of you were, and it's great to be with you, and I hope that our studies together will be profitable as we continue to talk about unearthing godly passion. As I suggested this morning, my wife and I came up with this as we were thinking about the things that the elders here wanted me to talk about and include in my thoughts and to fit with your theme of serving one another this year and some other thoughts the elders had. And so we were walking in a place that would ultimately be flooded during Hurricane Harvey. As we talked about this, we thought about this title as it relates to Colossians chapter 3 and verse 2, set your mind on the things above and not on the things that are on earth. You've probably heard that verse many times, but the reading of it and the hearing of it is a little bit more easy to accomplish than the actual doing of it in our lives, because there's so many things that clutter our minds, that draw our affections in an earthly direction. Things like hurricanes and storms, and we think about what's going on around us in our circumstances, in our world, and there's so much that comes to us as we live our lives that causes our focus to be directed toward things on the earth. But we need to set our sights higher than that. And it's more than just a Sunday thing. It needs to be an everyday thing. We've been doing a neighborhood Bible study, something that one of our elders instigated, and we agreed to host one in our neighborhood. Since our congregation is spread out in like a 30-mile radius from the building in every direction, we thought this might be a good way to hopefully accomplish some evangelism, is to have Bible studies in our neighborhood. And we've been using this app called the Next Door app, and it's been very helpful of getting the word out in our neighborhood. We've had neighbors come to the Bible study, and we're only about 13 weeks into the study. We've been going through the Gospel of Mark, and I was thinking about that this morning, actually, while I was preaching. We've had a fellow who's been coming who is of a certain denominational background, and he's never written in his Bible before. And he saw all of us writing in his Bible. So when I talked about underlining a certain word in my Bible, he's just started doing that and doing that for the first time in his Bible study. And he's eager to learn, and I'm excited about the opportunities that we have. But as we go through the Gospel of Mark, and one of the reasons why we chose Mark was because Mark is emphasizing the person of Jesus, that this is someone who was awesome, who commands loyalty and respect. He did so many amazing things during his earthly ministry. And then we thought about, okay, when we're done with Mark, because we just finished chapter 13, where are we going next? And so when I get done with my meetings this fall here in a couple of weeks, you know, we're going to be back into that every week study, and we're going to go to the book of Colossians. And it just occurred to me as we decided to do that, how good of a follow-up Paul's epistle to the church at Colossae is with the study of Mark. Because what you see in Colossians 1, 2, 3, and 4 is the supremacy of Christ in everything, in creation, in redemption, and needs to be first in our lives. Even like Colossians 3 and verse 4, when Christ, who is our life, think about that, Christ, who is our life, when He is revealed, then you also will be revealed with Him in glory. And we need to stay focused on that as we keep setting our minds on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. And so we're going to talk about decluttering our hearts and how to stay focused on the things that matter most in our world. We're going to talk about some of the obstacles to that, some of the obstacles that you face tomorrow night as we talk about overcoming your giants. And we're going to talk about this conflict that happens for all of us. Am I going to do what's comfortable and easy for me, or am I going to choose the Father's will in my life? And then we're going to conclude with talking about the tenacity of our faith, staying committed over the long haul, which is such a challenge for all of us. So many surrender faith in the journey. And I'm going to say some things tonight that are sort of along that line, and we'll conclude with these thoughts at the end of the meeting. You have some passion for God, or you wouldn't be here on a Sunday night at 5 o'clock, and I want to fuel that passion, encourage, cultivate that passion for Him. So tonight, we're going to talk about the life of Joseph. And that encompasses a good bit of the book of Genesis. About a quarter of the material, the life of Joseph. And so we're going to read all of that tonight. No, I'm just kidding. We're not going to do that. I'm going to assume that you have some familiarity with the life of Joseph. Our young people have been hearing about the story of Joseph. And it's a fascinating story, isn't it? One of the great characters of the Old Testament. We're doing a study at home on the patriarchs, just finishing that up. And it's just a fascinating study. These men that were the beginnings of God's unfolding of this great promise to Abraham. So what do you know about Joseph? How would you summarize the life of Joseph? When you think about that character in the book of Genesis, what kind of thoughts come to mind? What are you thinking about? Think about some of those stories. What's outstanding about this Old Testament character? I think about one thing. I think about the fact that, and this could have been mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11, by faith Joseph demonstrated a tremendous work ethic. I mean, I think about his time in Potiphar's house, that he would ascend to such a place after being sold into slavery by his brothers. I mean, he went from being a slave to the Ishmaelites to, and I would like to know more about the process that led to him being in Potiphar's house. And he's over all of Potiphar's house. And then the whole business with Potiphar's wife takes place. But we are told this, that the Lord was with Joseph. So here's a man of faith. He worked hard for his master. And so we're also thinking in regard to that story, we could say something about his moral integrity. By faith, Joseph refused to take advantage of the situation when Potiphar's wife, no doubt a beautiful woman, at least she probably wore a lot of makeup, this attractive woman wanted to be immoral with him. And he said, without anyone looking over his shoulder, without his brothers or his dad or any one of his kinsmen, here he is all alone. And he says, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? What great conviction he had. And so if I think about one outstanding characteristic in the life of Joseph, I think about that. And overcoming great adversity, like I mentioned, I mean, your siblings, how well do you get along with them? I've got two sisters. It's been rough. I think of the passage in Mark chapter 10 about people that give up houses and farms and relationships, parents, siblings, in order to be a part of the kingdom. And he says, those of you who have given that up, you'll receive 100 times as much in this life and eternal life in the age to come. Well, that doesn't mean, obviously, that if you give up a farm, you'll get 100 farms. Or if you give up these relationships, that you'll get 100. And plus, 100 times two sisters is 200. And I don't know anybody could live with 200 sisters. So that's not what that passage is talking about. It's not a health and wealth concept. Whatever you give up, you get 100 times. You get 100 times as much. That's not what it's saying. But I've never experienced, as bad as it was growing up with two sisters, and one of them that would always get me in trouble, my little sister, and I think maybe she's being paid back as she's now, Irma's at her house. She tormented, my older sister left me alone, but my little sister tormented me. In fact, the first time I preached this sermon was just a few weeks ago when she was in the audience. She had come for a visit, and so I thought, boy, this is perfect. I mean, I never forget the time we were down in the basement. Of course, I grew up in southern Indiana. We don't have basements where I live in Houston. I mean, you can't have one of those down there. So I grew up in Indiana, and we had a basement. And we played a lot in the wintertime down in the basement, and that's where we went as kids. You know, Mom, Dad, go down to the basement and play, and we did. But it was mostly with my younger sister, and I'll never forget the occasion. We would turn the light off, which was in the hallway, and then it was dark. And so we'd make the mad dash to the stairs to get out of the darkness. You know, we talked about that this morning. You know, kids are afraid of the dark. And I'll never forget the time I was beating her to the stairs, and I was like 3 or 4 or 5 steps up, and she's behind me, and she grabs me from behind and pulls me off the stairs, and I got in trouble. I said, Dad, logic, it couldn't be my fault because I landed on top of her, not the other way around, which I thought was sort of the silver lining in the whole thing. She cushioned my fall. But she would chase me around with that alligator. Okay, she had this pet alligator. I should have chopped that thing with an axe into 100 pieces. Because it scared, I don't know why it scared me, but that rubber alligator really bothered me. And I guess to this day, I don't like reptiles of any kind. Yeah, I've got some scars. Yeah, I do. With my sister. But as bad as it was, I was never sold into slavery. You think about that. Your brothers. And it could have been worse. Some of them were of a mind to kill it. And yet he overcomes that. He overcomes Potiphar's wife who lies about it. I mean, I'm doing the right thing. You're doing the right thing, and she lies about it. He's thrown into prison. Oh, then what happens? The dreams of the butler and the baker. Doesn't go so well for the baker, but it went pretty well for the butler, as you'll remember. And so the butler is restored to his position, and what does he do? He forgets about Joseph. How do you forget that? Or not mention that. Finally, a couple years pass, and ultimately we know how all that story unfolds, and he becomes second over all Egypt. But he overcomes a lot of adversity, over a decade of adversity, before his fortunes begin to change. And that says something about his hopeful outlook, his hopeful resolve. And I think it had something to do with promises. The promise made to Abraham, his great-grandfather, as we'll see in a moment, had something to do with those dreams, those inspired dreams that he had when he was a younger man living in his father's house. And we could also talk about, isn't this a great part of the story? When he had the opportunity, and they thought, when Jacob had died, here it comes. He's going to lower the boom on us. He's going to finally exact his revenge. And he says to them what? And we've loved these statements, right? You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. How incredible is that? Would you have responded like that? Would you have displayed mercy to brothers who had sold you into slavery? What a great character. And yet, when we come to Hebrews chapter 11, all of these great things about the story of Joseph, none of those things are mentioned in the great hall of faith. There's one thing mentioned about the life of Joseph, and it's none of those great things. Did you look ahead when you saw the title? by faith Joseph. Did you go to Hebrews chapter 11 and look at the verse? Maybe you did. I hope you did. If not, I'm giving it to you now. By faith, Joseph. What did he do? Gave orders concerning his bones. Of all the things you could have talked about in regard to the story of Joseph in the book of Genesis, this is what the Hebrew writer records, this one thing. As he was nearing death, he gave orders regarding his bones that when, not if, when his people leave Egypt, that they would take his bones. That's extraordinary. What was Joseph all about? His identity was tied to his hope. That's extraordinary. Here is a man who is second over all Egypt. All the cream of Egypt is being poured into his hands. And he's concerned about his bones and where they will ultimately reside. I just quoted something from F.B. Meyer. All the cream of Egypt was being poured into his hands. But he didn't say that about Joseph. He actually said that about Moses. You know, and Moses and Joseph have this connection. If you look at Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 24, by faith Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. Considering the reproach of Christ to be greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. Godly passion. That's the connection between Joseph and Moses. Though they were in the most elite house perhaps in the world at that time, the house of Pharaoh, the great Egypt, they are in a place of privilege and wealth and opportunity, awesome circumstance, and yet Moses chooses the reproach of Christ. Have you ever wondered about that? Moses lived before the Messiah, and that's what Christ refers to, the anointed one of the old. He didn't know who the Messiah was. He didn't know who the Christ was, but that has everything to do with Joseph's orders concerning his bones. Because it's about God's promise. It's about God's intentions through the descendants of Abraham. And both of them, both Joseph and Moses, were clinging to God's promise. His identity was tied to his hope. Notice this in the book of Hebrews. Let's get to the verse itself. When he was dying, he made mention of the exodus of the sons of Israel and gave orders concerning his bones. I want you to see the strength of Joseph's convictions. This is not the end. This is just a part of the process. We are going to a land that God promised my great-grandfather. And when you go, when God's timing comes, I want you to take my bones. I have that kind of confidence in this promise. When he was dying, focus on that for a second. And then look back to what Hebrews 11 says about his father. By faith, Jacob, as he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshiped, leaning on the top of his staff. What were the blessings of his sons all about? I love Genesis 49. When Jacob goes through and blesses each son, and some of them, oh boy, that's not so good. Especially the sons that had crossed him in some way. Reuben, Levi, and Simeon. Lemuel, I like that. I'm going to start going with that. We'll just hook the two of them together. Lemuel. Levi, Simeon, Reuben. Not so glorious blessings. It's prophetic. Genesis 49 is prophetic. I mean, the scepter shall not depart from Judah. That affects the rest of the Bible story. the blessings of Manasseh and Ephraim, the sons of Joseph, some of the better blessings, some of the more prominent tribes in Israel. I mean, this was about how God was going to work things out in the future. This was prophetic. In fact, by the way, the patriarchs are called prophets in the Psalms, interestingly enough. Genesis 49 is prophetic. And so both Joseph and Jacob, what's mentioned about them is something regarding the time of their death. And then look at Isaac. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau, even regarding things to come. Why is the Hebrew writer mentioning this? We talked about all the things he could have said about Joseph. What about all he could have said about Isaac and particularly Jacob? I mean, he could have said a lot of other things. But focusing on the fulfillment of this promise, what's going to happen in the future with God's people? Well, what about our definition of faith? Verse 1. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. You see how these three men and what is said about them in Hebrews chapter 11 ties back into what faith is all about. It is the substance of things hoped for. What's the substance of the promise? The substance is Christ. He's the substance. And that's why Moses chose the reproaches of Christ. He was honed in on where everything was ultimately going in God's scheme of things, in God's history. And that's why I talked to you this morning about how to view history. Most important event of all history. We talked about that this morning. And let me talk to you about your role in history. What does your life mean? What about your dent that you're making in the world? What does it mean in the whole scheme of things? If it's not tied to God's purposes, if it's not tied to the Creator's wishes for your life, then you're missing. And these men teach us that. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. If we'll tie into that, we will begin to unearth godly passion. I know most scriptural sermons have 3 points, right? 3 points in the lesson series. Actually, I just got a couple thoughts I want to share with you. And I'm not sure why that word matter is not there. I want to talk to you about the conclusion of the matter. A little font issue there. Sometimes that happens in gospel meetings. So just imagine the word matter there. It's actually down there. Let's talk about the conclusion of the matter. Let's talk about your identity. Joseph knew well his identity. It wasn't about being second over all Egypt. It was about his role in God's plan and where all that was ultimately. What's your identity? I'll tell you what we do. We tend to view ourselves in relation to earthly things. I mean, this is the car I drive. You know, when you get enough money, you work towards this, you get enough money. My first car my dad gave me, I mean, I guess he was trying to humble me, and I guess all kids need that a little bit. I was driving that really ugly army green 1972 Plymouth Duster. I mean, that was embarrassing to send a kid to school in a car like that. Finally, though, he had a little mercy, a little compassion. He got me a new car. Well, it wasn't brand new. It was used. A 1975 Camaro. With a straight six. I mean, it was one of those, you pop the hood on that big front end of that Camaro, and you could see ground on both sides of that engine. But that was straight six, but it wasn't a very powerful car at all. I mean, you hit the gas, and finally it went kind of thing, but it had a sunroof. And an 8-track player. Kids are going, I don't even know what that is. It was before cassettes. And I remember playing my Foreigner music with the sunroof out down at Florida College, and me and my buddies from SC going over to Clearwater playing that music. I remember that. Boy, that was cool. What I didn't tell you is that car was orange. I mean, everybody knew on campus when I that thing was so bright, it blinded people. The orange Camaro. But, you know, you sort of build up. You know, your cars get better as you get, ideally, if things work out better for you, then your car gets better as you get older. In fact, I may drive the nicest car now that I've ever had. But why do we tie our identity to those things? You know, the neighborhood I live in, the clothes I wear, all kinds of physical stuff. It's all temporary. We need to make friends with the mammon of unrighteousness, Jesus says in Luke 16, that when it fails, they may receive you into eternal dwellings. I really didn't mean to mention this verse because it's a really difficult verse. But what I think that passage is saying is that our stewardship of material things is going to testify against us or for us. How we use the material things that have been entrusted to us, because it is the true riches that we need to focus on, Jesus says in that text. And that's what I'm talking to you about tonight. The conclusion of the matter. The true riches. Ultimately, it's not going to matter what neighborhood you lived in or how big your house was or what your possessions looked like or how comfortable your bed was. All of those things aren't going to matter. And I'm into a comfortable bed, don't get me wrong. I mean, we have that thing. It's taken us a long time. We graduated from the queen bed to the king bed. That was huge. And now I've got this double foam thing on my side of the bed. It's like it goes off and Sherry sleeps on the hard bed. I don't know why she wants to do that. You can ask her. I don't know why she wants to do that. But, I mean, we have all these possessions that make our lives more comfortable. It's all temporary. That's not what we're all about. We're about the conclusion of the matter. And that to what passage? When all has been heard. The conclusion of the matter is what? Fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every person. God will bring you into judgment for this. That's what matters. And so now I want you to recall the entire book of Ecclesiastes. What is Solomon saying in the book of Ecclesiastes? As I work through that book, as you draw up the whole book in your mind, what is he saying? In light of the inability of earthly pleasure and wisdom to satisfy, chapter 1 and 2, in light of the undiscriminating challenges of life, there's a time for this and a time for that, like hurricanes, and it's undiscriminating, right? Righteous and unrighteous alike. That leads to number 3, in light of inequities to both rich and poor, righteous and unrighteous, everyone dies alike. Really bothered Solomon. In some ways, there doesn't seem to be an advantage under the sun for even the righteous man. Sometimes the righteous man suffers more than the unrighteous. So in light of that, and then he comes to the fourth point, in light of your inevitable physical decline. That's what chapter 12 is. You know, ultimately, man returns to the dust, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. And I was just kidding this morning, right, when I said, in 5 years since I've been here, you haven't changed a bit. I mean, Wayne looks a lot older than he did 5 years ago. No, he doesn't. He looks the same. But we age, we know that. In light of where all of us are headed, the conclusion of the matter is fear God and keep His commandments. And so I want to say this. This is what Joseph teaches us. Choose and live in view of eternity. And I know our problem is we just don't know what the experience of that is going to be like. And this is all we've ever known. And we've had so many days here. I mean, I mean, we fully expect to go to bed tonight and wake up tomorrow, but we don't have a guarantee of that. And we hear preachers talk about that, about our mortality and the suddenness sometimes of our mortality. We don't give any thought to that. We think there's going to be a day, another day after that, and another. But our experience should tell us in things that people die. That ultimately all people die, and that's going to be my fate as well. Then what? One great disadvantage is that we haven't had the experiences of Joseph to create a sufficient longing for something that is immensely better. The font's messed up again. I should have taken a look at that. But you get the idea. It's immensely better. What other adjective? I mean, I wish there was another one besides immensely. That's as big as I can. It's going to be so much better. To depart with Christ is better, Paul says in Philippians chapter 1 and verse 23. It's exceedingly better. You know, we're all about upgrades. We flew Southwest getting here last night, and they don't have a first class. But have you ever been one of those people that you're sitting back in coach or plan to be sitting back in coach, and they move you up to first? I've never had that experience. I've heard if you're on an overseas flight, you want the upgrade. If you can somehow go to first class, your flight would be so much better over the pond if you're up there. Much more comfortable. We're all about upgrades. Do you realize however good your little niche in this world is here right now, no matter how much we love family and don't want to depart from them, heaven is an exceeding upgrade to anything we can have and carve out for our lives here. That's why Paul says, set your affections on things above, not on things of this earth. You know people with physical disabilities. Our heart goes out to those people. Gary Sandusky is a preacher friend of mine. Preached in Madison, Indiana for many, many years. And know some of his family, Scott Sandusky. There was a work accident. Scott's done some preaching too. But in a work accident, he lost his leg. And I just saw a picture of him with his prosthesis leg doing some athletic stuff on Facebook. And that really warms my heart to see that. But I'll tell you what, that prosthetic leg, he's really working it. He's making the best of it, but it will never be the same as the two legs that he was born with. And when something like that happens in your life, or some other debilitating thing happens, physically, you will never be what you were. And if those things don't tell us anything else, they should say, we need to long for something far better than our existence here. And that's what Peter is saying to us. In 2 Peter chapter 3, as we wrap this up tonight, 2 Peter chapter 3, when he talks about the day of the Lord that will come like a thief, in which the heavens will pass away. That day is coming. It's closer than it's ever been. What sort of people ought you to be? In all holy conduct and godliness, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, on account of which the heavens will be destroyed by burning and the elements will melt with intense heat. But according to his promise, we are looking for a new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. Oh, you mean there's going to be a new earth like this one? All that language is telling us that there's going to be a new dimension, a new era that replaces all of this physical stuff that we've known, a spiritual heaven and a spiritual earth. What's that going to look like? I don't know. But it's what's following this, and I'll tell you, the only thing that's going to be there is good, in which righteousness dwells. You want that, whether you realize it or not. Therefore, beloved, since you look for these things, you need to keep your eyes trained on these things. Since you look for these things, be diligent to be found by Him in peace, spotless and blameless. And regard the patience of our Lord to be salvation. Well, if these things describe us, then we have unearthed godly passion. Do they describe you? Can we assist you to choose the right course for your life? The holy conduct that brings glory to our God. Can we assist you in obeying the gospel of our Lord tonight? Let's stand and sing.